Do you like books? I mean, really, really like books? Then you're in the right place. Each week, your host, Sam Hankin, interviews the best of today's top-selling authors and the up-and-coming superstars of modern literature. This is The Avid Reader. Here is your host, Sam Hankin.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another edition of The Avid Reader. Today, our guest is Bryn Chancellor, author of Sycamore, her debut novel published in May by Harper. Bryn's short story collection is When Are You Coming Home? And her short fiction has also appeared in Gulf Coast, Blackbird, The Colorado Review, and also many other magazines and reviews. Sycamore is a novel with a piece missing. The funny thing is, that missing piece drives the force of the entire narrative. In a little town, a town some would rather not even be in, the memories, the ghost of an event that happened 18 years before, haunts many of the residents who had a relationship with the missing girl, Jess, who's the absent star of this novel. What's interesting and thought-provoking is how important closure is when something like this happens. People ripple, and Jess's history and her personality ripple throughout the town and through the lives and the shaped personalities of the people with whom she came in contact in her short relationship with them. Sycamore is scary and thought-provoking and forces the reader to place himself in a hypothetical similar position. You know, what would I do? What would I do resonates throughout the whole book. And that's what makes it such a powerful read. So with that, welcome, Bryn, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much, and thanks for that great intro.
You're welcome. So tell us a little bit about Jess and what happened to her.
Well, she arrives in the town of Sycamore when she is 16 with her mother in the wake of a divorce, and so she and her mom kind of uproots her from the city down the hill, Phoenix, and so she lands in this new place where she, you know, in a couple of months from then turns 17, and so the novel tracks her life, her first year there, at the end of which she goes missing one night. And so the novel moves back and forth from the present time to that past year with Jess. So that's a little about her.
what about you? You seem like, I know you're from the area that you mm-hmm. write of, and the topography and the scenery and the flora and fauna of the place is so clear to the reader. You must know it intimately yourself, correct?
I do. Yeah, Sycamore is a fictional town in that I made up a name, but I'm using a real area, and I mean it's not exact in any way, but it's basically the area next to where I grew up. I grew up in Sedona, Arizona, pretty famous town now. But I went to high school in the nearby towns of Cottonwood and Clarkdale. It's called the Verde Valley, and so when I was thinking about a small town, I knew I couldn't really. Well, I had trouble using Sedona. It's so big, and so but I knew that area just as well. I spent junior high and high school on the bus going back and forth to it. So it's a place that's, you know, pretty intimately in my memory, and I go back there as well for family and friends.
Your epigraph from the song The Golden State by John Doe, you say, "We are tangled, we are stolen, we are living where things are hidden." How did that come to you, and why does it resonate so closely with an epigraph should, obviously, but why does it resonate so closely with the book? How did you come about that?
Yeah, I was so grateful to John Doe for giving me the permission to use that, because I love that song. And what happened was I was kind of, my husband had put it on a mixtape for me, and I just kind of got obsessed with it. And so I'd been listening to it a lot, and then as I was at a residency, and I was listening to it one morning, and I just something about the combination of the lyrics, but also the way the song is bittersweet, and there's these two voices that come in, in my version it's Kathleen Edwards singing with John Doe, and it's a little, you know, minor chord and kind of twangy, and yeah, it sort of unlocked something for me. So I listened to it more times than I'd like to announce while I was writing. And
it's funny because, the other lyric in it, right before the what you quote says, you know, you're the dream in my nightmare.
And, yeah, exactly.
And I thought about that in terms of the book, too, especially in terms of Maud.
Right.
But
yeah, Maud is, I mean, I think about this book because there's so many points of view. And
there are.
And so, yeah, and so the question of, like, who's the protagonist, you know? And, you know, it might seem like it's Jess, but for me, one of the main figures very much is Maud. She is mother. She's Jess's mother, and she's a mail carrier, and she's the one who, you know, she was in her early 40s when she, you know, is divorced and moves her child up to this new town, so and then she stays in that place. And, yeah, and sort of what do you do when someone's missing for that long, and I think she and Jess appear in every chapter, though, even in their not when they're not in their right. own point of view. So like you said, dream in my nightmare. It's really hard for her, and so one of my questions for her was how does she move forward in her life, and it's one of the questions she asks of herself, like how do I move out of this state of being, like I think it's called, I write the endless now, where she's just kind of trapped in memory and not able to move forward.
There's a lot of things I'd like to talk about, but I don't want to give anything away, you know, because there's lots of spoilers in here. And especially like the very last paragraph of the book is important in so many ways, especially with regard to what, you know, we're talking about in terms of how do you go on? Why did you decide to include Laura? And without giving anything away, Laura is a person who's of interest in the book. But why did you decide to use Laura as kind of like a catalyst in this book?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, one thing that's great about Laura that was useful for me is that she's new in town.
Right.
Yeah.
She doesn't want to be, and she doesn't want to be there either. No one wants to be in Sycamore.
Not really. Some people do. I'm interested in why people want to leave or stay or why they come back. And I mean, in her case, she's in fleeing her own, you know, it's in the present. It's 2009 and she doesn't know anyone in town. She's brand new. And so she's dealing with her own relationship falling apart, and she takes this job in this town. And so she's kind of in the strange space of like, you know, trying to learn her new place, but thinking about her past. And but so, you know, craft-wise, she was really useful for me because I, you know, she sees things differently than someone who lives there for a long time. She's going to notice stuff. So I could bring in kind of some of the details of the land in a way that felt more organic. But I was interested in just having this other, you know, this new person who had no connection to the history of Jess's story at all.
It is interesting how people end up staying in places. I mean, I've done it in different times in my life, stayed in a place where you either feel comfortable but not happy, or happy mm-hmm. but slightly edgy, you know,
yeah.
and you have ideas in your mind, well, you know, what the grass is going to be greener or something like that. But you really portray it well in Sycamore, because each of the characters, whether it's Danny or Angie or Rose or Hazel or Paul or Robert, they all don't want to really, it doesn't seem like anyone really wants to be there. I'm sorry to repeat that. But it seems like they're all looking for something, and then that goes back and ties directly into Jess for each of them. It's interesting how it works.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that, you know, partly my own wrestling with, you know, being from a small town, that question of, from growing up, I always remember when people would go, they'd leave, and then often they'd come back. And you always knew that when people, I would always recognize or notice, like, oh, someone almost, like, got away and then got back, which is also, I mean, one of the things as an older person now, looking back, though, I have a lot more compassion for that. You know, as a kid, I just couldn't wait to get out of there. But as an adult, there's all kinds of reasons to stay, and not all of them are, you know, giving up or, you know, some people, I think I have Adam say that at one point, you know, a lot of people like it here, and that's true. People find comfort in, you know, what they know, and I try, you know, I don't feel judgmental about that, and I've you know, wrestled with that going home in my writing and kind of wrestling a little bit with my past self and how I see it in the present, and kind of I feel a little more compassionate now.
And you know, there is something about being comfortable. I mean, you know, it's not a bad thing. It's, you know, there's something a lot to be said about being comfortable, because so many people aren't. You know, you and when you aren't, you regret that you didn't you took it for granted. You know, you're talking about Adam and when I have an independent bookstore and we have lots of book clubs. So whenever I read a book and interview an author, I always think, well, the book's going to be a book in our book club or something. And this is a perfect book club book. Have you had any talks yet with book clubs, or have you had any encounters with groups where they have different viewpoints of, say, for example, Adam? Because I know.
I feel like that's going to be a thing.
Yeah, it's going to be a big thing.
I do have a couple of book clubs. I have one lined up in the fall, and I've never done that before, so I am interested to hear how that goes. I did an online interview that I just finished this morning, and it'll be posted, I think, soon, and that was one of the questions of, you know, she asked, you know, I felt so conflicted reading from Adam's perspective, the letter. He writes a letter to his daughter, Danny, and just so many emotions in that scene. And I responded, it's true that was one of the hardest sections to write, trying to get into his point of view and, you know, question why he was doing what he was doing was hard.
That was another question I had, too, is why you chose to, which I thought was very effective, but why you chose to use the format you used when the big climax scene happens in the middle of the book, why you chose to use that format without giving it away.
Do you mean the letter?
No, the play.
Oh, the play. Yeah, sorry. Well, it was such a dramatic scene, right? Like, the thought of trying to write that out in prose was just so hyper. It felt so hyperbolic. I mean, and Rachel, that's Adam's ex-wife, and Danny's mom, and she is recalling it, and she's also a playwright, so that format made sense that she would think in it, but also it just helped me sort of condense some of the way that it could feel really overblown. And she acknowledges that it is. And so to put it in that, like, she always saw it as a play, that helped me handle some of the heightened, like, drama. Because if I'd just written it, it would have been really hard to do.
It's interesting because, in a way, it was kind of like watching a movie where after you go home and you sit down and you think about it and you go, oh, that's why that happened. Or that's why that was like that. And I did that in a lot of ways with Jess, in the way I thought that she was treated unfairly, whether she was treated unfairly by Angie or by Danny or by Adam or by Maude, and then how maybe Adam was treated unfairly. And then I thought, well, what does that really mean, Sam? And what does that really mean as far as the book's concerned? And then I thought, well, wait a minute. That actually means what happened because she was treated unfairly. And then you go to a specific night, and there's physical manifestations of the way she's being treated unfairly that lead to what it leads to. I'm trying not to spoil anything.
I know, it's hard.
But it's good when you write a book like that, but it's hard to ask certain questions. But, the physically what happens in the book really reflects in a lot of ways the way that Jess is treated or that she treats other people.
Yeah, that's interesting to think about, you know, fairness and blame and fault. And I think I was trying to make it not too simple, you know, that everyone was a little bit complicit, including Jess, I mean, including everyone that without giving things away, so in other words, I wasn't interested as a writer in assigning blame to anyone. You know, say it was this person's fault and this is how it happened.
That's true.
Instead, I was more like, you know, look at how it's tangled. Well, there we are again, tangled, stolen. You know, there's all kinds of small reasons that add up that really you can't, you know, linearly lay out like this is why and how. I don't think there's a pattern we can connect, you know.
And then when you drill down into the characters, none of the characters are really what you would call evil or villainous, you know? They're all admixtures of all kinds of qualities, but I wouldn't say any of them are necessarily bad, you know?
Yeah. I hope not. I mean, I try to think of, you know, think hard about, you know, why people are doing things and not go with the easy answer. You know, if there's a bad guy, and as you're right, you know, the so-called bad guy, it's Adam probably, or at least seemingly so, I think. So that's, I think, why he was difficult to get at. But then I started thinking about him as a father and you know, as an aging father especially, and how you know, how he's you know, is really lost. And then, you know, it was when I chose the form of the letter, actually, that was where I kind of, and that he was writing specifically to his daughter, that was where I was able to access him in a way that I couldn't when I was kind of just looking at him, you know, when I had to force him to write that letter. And kind of be honest in a way that he hadn't before. That was one way I could round him out a little bit more.
Hey, when Jess goes to work harvesting the nuts and she's working with Danny's boyfriend, did you do that? It almost seems like you did it.
Really? No, I didn't. And, you know, and that's a fictional construct. There's no pecan orchard in the Verde Valley. Although there could be. I did do a lot of research on it, and I'm trying to remember that there was a, I should give a shout out to the blog I used a lot. There's a farm in Texas that they did a lot of really great updates about what they were doing each month. I was like, yeah, what are you doing each month? What's going on in there? So I got a lot of the kind of technical details.
That was good then, because, you know, all authors, you know, tell me don't let your research show, and your research didn't show. It really seemed like it was something that was taken from your life. Like you.
Oh,
knew.
I'm glad. I'm glad.
Yeah, it was. That was a very interesting part, especially when Jess writes the poem about it, and then I like the way she destroys her poems after she writes them too. Thought that was interesting.
Yeah, just as, you know, I think I'm in some ways, well, I'm, you know, I shouldn't even say this. I'm embarrassed. I don't really write poetry, although I wish I could. I love it. I love reading it, and I just have never, I've always been embarrassed by writing my poems. I just never really can do it. But so with her, it was great, because I got
perfect.
To try these forms, and also she's young, right? So I didn't have to make them perfect, and they're rough, and I could just play with language the way that she loves to play with language. And I should say too that, you know, I get inspired. I teach, so, you know, I see college students, also some high school students. I mean, they write amazing things, and that made me realize, well, sure, she could write poems this good, you know, that are really kind of thoughtful and complex, and that, when I figured that out, was one of the things that she did that helped me kind of get at her character a little more.
Yeah, that was very effective, and she's a very complex, wonderful, kind, nice person, and she forges almost these really good relationships, and it's just you know, it's the sundering. The book has a sundering quality to it.
Thanks. Yeah, she, you know, it's funny. I really, second to Adam, actually, she was the person I kind of resisted writing. I know that's strange, thinking now the finished book is, you know, at least half of her sections. But initially, I didn't have her in there much at all. I had those diaries. I had some poems, and I had her writing in those notebooks. So this kind of weird, close first person. And I just, it wasn't enough to make, you know, I kept asking, like, why do these people miss her? Who is this person? And so I had to, you know, really after I got the first draft down, that was what I focused on, was her sections and expanding that out. And I kind of, when I was able to pull back to what I think of it as kind of an omniscient point of view where we start with her, I was able to see her more clearly and start to get at her a little more fully.
Yeah, I think it became more effective, and it certainly in the denouement became very effective, especially on the last part, which was like, you know, James Joyce Ulysses, kind of like in Nighttown, you know?
Yeah, it's someone, I mean, that was one of the questions I have, is like, how do you write someone who's not, who's missing, you know? And then I just went with old school, like, I'm going to be the narrator. Omniscient point of view, that's how you do it.
You did a great job. I really enjoyed the book. It's like I said, I have an independent bookstore, Wellington Square Bookshop, and the book is on our front table, and I'm pretty sure it'll be picked as a book club selection. And if so, that'd be great if you could Skype in and talk to us.
I would love it. And I just, yeah, shout out to independent booksellers. You all rock.
Thank you very much. We do our best. So thanks so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Sam.
That was Bryn Chancellor talking with us about her new novel, her first novel, Sycamore, which is a mystery thriller, but it's also very literary, and it's also gives you pause, you know. It's something that could happen, you would never want to see happen, but it does make you think, and for a first-time author, it was a first-time novelist, it was excellent. Thanks for joining us, as always. Upcoming guests include, well, we got a bunch of them, but one I'm interested in is Helena Kelly, who's going to discuss her latest work, Jane Austen, The Secret Radical. And what she does is in her book, she goes through chapter by chapter the different Jane Austen books and how they kind of create her character and how we remember her, whether she was fearless, whether she was challenging, whether she was independent, and how each of the novels that she wrote reflected an aspect of that character. So I look forward to that one very much. And I look forward to having you guys back with us next week here on The Avid Reader.